You're listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR. Now here are your hosts, Nathan Zagura and Matt Wilhelm.
Welcome to Cleveland Browns Daily. The Browns fall to 0-4, losing 31-20 against the Redskins. And for the third straight week, you certainly could say the Browns had a chance to win this one. And unfortunately, they gave it away. They had a stretch going from the end of the first half to the second half, Matt Wilhelm, where they scored on four straight possessions, erasing a 14-0 lead, ultimately leading 20-17. And then three straight possessions ended with turnovers. A Malcolm Johnson fumble that I think was the absolute turning point in the game. A Duke Johnson fumble that he recovered, by the way, that the NFL gave to the Redskins, which I thought was absurd. And they're still defending their decision, which is even more absurd. And then a Cody Kessler interception, and that stretch right there turned it. They end up losing 31-20, and the Browns will get into it. There's a lot of positives to take out of it, but the fact remains that amongst the 32 teams in the National Football League, there's only one team without a victory thus far. And that team is the Cleveland Browns.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. It really is. And watching yesterday, my gosh, I was rooting my tail off in that first half with Crowell's touchdown and our ability to punch it in with physicality, which is something that I wanted to see all offseason, and being able to run the football into the end zone inside the 5-yard line. You see other teams do it, and yet we've always tried to throw the football in, or our inability to run the football in. So that was great to see. And then I thought on the second touchdown, Terrell Pryor locked up with Josh Norman, runs into a double team, and yet still outruns it to the sideline. A perfectly thrown ball great by ball. Cody Kessler to where only Terrell Pryor could catch it, which I think is something that we see time and time again when the ball's thrown to Terrell Pryor from Cody Kessler. At least this week, the ball was in places where only Terrell Pryor could catch it, you know, minus maybe the interception, which was just a great play by Josh Norman and probably just great anticipation, as we saw going back to week two by Joe Hayden. When you know what's coming, you get right in front of it and you make those great plays. So it just stinks. And the effort from this football team, I think, you know, we lost some of the creativity that we carried into the Dolphins game because Washington was ready for Terrell Pryor, you know, in that 4 or 5 yard loss with him at quarterback. I don't think we did any of the exotic stuff that we had done in the past. It was line up, you know, get into a manageable situation for Cody Kessler, which I believe we did, run the ball on first down, which Crowell did time and time again with, what, 4 carries over 10 yards in this football game, and in a shoestring or an ankle tackle away from a significantly longer run. I think at one point in the football game, we finished 8 of 12 on third down. But to have Cody Kessler go at one point, I think 7 for 7 on third down. I'm sorry, I think 9 for 9 on third down and 7 of those going for first downs. Just goes to show what Hugh Jackson and Cody Kessler working together as well as his offensive staff can do offensively, which gives you a chance. And that's the one thing that you say, we had a chance to win that football game just like we had in the two prior weeks, but we, for whatever reason, missed a kick. We, you know, didn't seize the moment in the Baltimore football game and put the pedal to the metal and keep scoring. And yesterday turned the football over. And I think you can't say that the Washington Redskins all out went out and beat you.
You can't say that. And again, you talked about the positives. Cody Kessler, 28 out of 40, 223 yards, his first NFL touchdown. You referenced the prior one interception, quarterback rating of 81.6. Isaiah Crowell continues to be a superstar in the making. The NFL's second leading rusher, leads the league in yards per carry at 6.4. 15 carries, 112 yards on the day, and another touchdown. And Crow is a guy who just seems so at home in this offense, so at home with what they're doing. And the Browns have just been going out there and really getting everything done running the football. This is the first time that a Brown, he leads the team, he's got 386 yards rushing. That's the most by a Brown in the first four games of a season since Jim Brown in 1965. First Browns player to record at least 60 yards rushing in each of the team's first four games since Ernest Biner in 1985. That is unbelievable. It's the first time they've rushed for 120 yards or more in four straight games since 2009. A rushing score in four straight, first time since 2012. Dan Murphy also tweeting out a cool stat as well about this ground game, talking about Duke Johnson and Crow, both averaging over 6 yards per carry. The last team that had two running backs average over 6 yards per carry through the first 4 weeks were the Browns with Jim Brown and Bobby Mitchell in 1958. This offense, when you think about it, okay, let's just sit back for a second and let's think about it. We lost all the people on the offensive line, right? This is the number one running offense in the National Football League right now. Crow, the number two runner in the league. Not only are they the number one running offense in the NFL, number one in yards per carry as well.
Let me ask you this. What you have, as you have these stats right in front of you, what are we in rush attempts? Because I think we are very efficient in our ability to run the football on probably a middle-of-the-road rushing attempts. It's not like we run the football 40 times in a football game.
So we are the number one rushing offense in the NFL. We have 597 yards rushing. That's 149.2 per game. We are averaging 5.7 yards per carry. The next best is 5.3. Nobody else in the NFL other than the Oakland Raiders, who are at 5.3, is even over 4.7.
Wow.
So we're a yard better than the third best team in terms of yards per carry in the National Football League. We have run it 104 times. Number two is Dallas. They've run it 140. Number three, the Patriots, 103. So if you were to sort by attempts, where do the Browns rank? 13th in the NFL
13th.
In attempts. So 104 attempts, 13th in the NFL attempts, first in yards.
So efficient and effective when we run the football.
Actually, that's not even a fair way to do it. We got to do attempts per game because we had two teams with bye weeks. The Browns are 14th. 14th. Philadelphia Eagles are actually third in rush attempts per game. The Browns are 14th in rush attempts per game. They are first in yards per game. They are first in yards per carry. And how about this? If you were to tell me after four games, first of all, it is not common either for a team to be leading the league in rushing and to be winless after four games.
No.
That is a massive anomaly because typically rushing is a game flow dictated scenario where you're winning and you put it away in the fourth quarter. Matt Jones had his best game, for example, because he was running in the fourth quarter. The Browns rank 12th in the NFL right now in overall total yards per game at 371. Let me say that again. You're on your third string quarterback, okay? You lost your first round pick wide receiver. No Josh Gordon. We know that. You lost all these people on your offensive line. You are now 12th in the NFL in yards per game. And even more impressive to me, you are tied for 5th in the NFL in yards per play. Same as the Pittsburgh Steelers. Ahead of the New Orleans Saints. Ahead of the Arizona Cardinals. Ahead of the Dallas Cowboys. Ahead of the Philadelphia Eagles. This is a team in terms of yards per play tied for 5th in the NFL. They're doing this all offensively. Now, defensively, that's where the problems come in. Defensively, we're giving up over 28 points per game. That's not going to cut it. We all know that. They've got to do a better job there. Turnover margin, as bad as it seems, now the Browns do have 5 fumbles. That's second most in the NFL. They put the ball on the ground 5 times, but turnover margin, only -1 on the season, not bad. Browns are giving up 28.8 points per game. They're giving up 378 yards per game. That's 11th most. So even so, you're gaining 372, basically. You're giving up 378. That's pretty even.
Right.
You're giving up on the season 5.7 yards per play. You're gaining 5.9. None of this indicates a team that's 0-4.
Right.
But they're young, and the margin for error is so small.
Yes.
And they keep making that one error. Malcolm Johnson fumbled this week. Missed field goals 2 weeks ago. The Cam Irving snap when you're down 13-10 and you've scored 3 straight possessions against Philadelphia. It turns into a safety in that game. The Baltimore Ravens, the blocked extra point, and all of a sudden you just can't get it going. They're there, but the margin for error is so small. There are.
And I think that's, you know, as we take callers today, 216-578-0850, it's that you can say they're playing hard. And you can tell that they're prepared. And I think that's a testament to this young football team and to Hugh Jackson. And as I continue to say, it's you need playmakers upon playmakers upon playmakers upon playmakers in the National Football League. And right now we are learning and learning these hard lessons. what we hope as the season goes on, and I know it doesn't get much easier, though we are coming back home after being away for 2 weeks against the New England Patriots, things should look better as we get players back, meaning Josh McCown in maybe 2 to 4 weeks, Corey Coleman back in 2 to 4 weeks, Carl Nassib back. The evaluation is ever ongoing of this young football team, and you just hope as you start to reload with some of the players that were missing via injury that they become the players that can step in and make those plays along with the guys that have been putting in the effort and the fight to get us into those situations where you are, in fact, one play away.
You are, and you've got to find a way to get it. By the way, on today's show, we do want to hear from you, get your reaction, 216-578-0850. Also today on the show, we will have at 1:30 Brian Baldinger, who was on the call yesterday of the game. We'll hear from Cody Kessler at the podium, Jim Donovan at 2, and then we'll take Hugh Jackson's presser live at 2:30 for an update there. Austin Ryder did a heck of a job yesterday starting. Unfortunately, it appears as though he will be lost for a significant amount of time with a knee injury there. But I thought this offensive line did a very good job. And when you talk about this Cleveland Browns team, and you talk about Isaiah Crowell making guys miss, running them over, he is now the top-graded running back in the NFL by Pro Football Focus. And in this particular game, where the bread was buttered, was running on that right side. Austin Pastore, a nice bounce back game. Obviously couldn't handle Cameron Wake, but this week did a very good job. When they run behind Greco and Pastore, running it off to the right-hand side of the formation, and oftentimes they're pulling Joel Bitonio, running traditional power football downhill at people. Here's what they did running to the right side. On 15 carries yesterday, they rushed for 125 yards running to that right side. 15 carries for 125 yards running to that right side. In fact, the only loss that they had really all day was that play with Pryor that lost 6 yards right, running left. Other than that, behind left Joe Thomas, 6 yards a carry. Behind Bitonio, 13 yards a carry. Right up the gut, 4 yards a carry, and then to the right side. 8.6, 7.5, and 11.0. They did a tremendous job running the football, and the way that they're hitting it, and Crow, the speed through the hole, the power, the shiftiness in the open field, making guys miss, extending runs, picking up that extra yardage. What he did on that third down catch to extend that drive, and unfortunately the next play was the Malcolm Johnson fumble. And for those wondering why Malcolm Johnson was in there, a fair question. Crow, I talked to him after the game. He was tired at that point, so he came out, which makes sense, needed a blow for a play. They were checking Duke Johnson for a concussion at that time, so he was unavailable. And instead of putting a rookie, George Atkinson, in, who was a running back, they decided to go with Malcolm Johnson. We know what happened. Obviously, in hindsight, you would have liked to see a pass play or anything else. But it was a play that would have gained 4 yards.
Correct. And that is, in fact, the thought process. As you saw us yesterday run the football on first down to get into second and manageable for Cody Kessler, the goal was to, and it's not take a playoff, but it's to steal 4 yards and keep us on schedule offensively. Because I would have thought, and maybe someone will ask that question if they have any football intellect, that I promise you at that situation, Hugh Jackson had a plan of how he was going to score getting down there.
Sure.
And it was, let me get to 2nd and 7, 2nd and 6, maybe 2nd and 5 by giving the football to Malcolm Johnson, get Isaiah Crowell back on the football field, and then attack that Washington defense with something, or go to Terrell Pryor on some type of bootleg or some type of action to get down inside the goal, you know, inside the 10-yard line, and then you run the football in again and chew up the clock. You go up in the football game, you know, by 10 points at that point, correct?
Yep.
And then
you score a touchdown, sure.
That's what I mean. And then you whittle them down. You force them to throw the football the remainder of the football game, and you can get after Kirk Cousins, and you can have your defensive backs then hone in on their playmakers.
Yeah, through two games, you got to like Cody Kessler, 67% completion percentage, one touchdown, one interception, quarterback rating of 83.5. Solid, once again, for the second straight week, puts you in position to win the game. He did. Yes, the interception, that ball was behind Terrell Pryor, needed to have that out in front of him, bad ball placement, but, I mean, the touchdown throw he made, that was a max protect. You had two guys out in a route, basically against three defenders. They doubled Pryor, and he got it in there anyway. That was right.
And even furthermore, the Terrell Pryor 3rd and 10 conversion for 11 yards, high and outside to where Terrell Pryor can only catch it. And then even, I think it was the first play or the second down in the second half, one of the first couple plays of the second half, the same thing to the right-hand side. Terrell Pryor runs, you know, a deep comeback for 11, 12 yards, and Cody puts some zip on it, you know, high and outside and just a little bit out of the reach of Terrell Pryor. But and I'm sure, speaking of Terrell Pryor, it's a play that you'd want to have back.
It is, and you want to get it. You want to get that ball out in front of him. Now, I think there are times where he still is a young player where he looks at, you know, locks onto his guy, think he knows where he's going to go with the ball beforehand, especially with Terrell Pryor. He's getting into that groove there. But, again, positives to be taken away from this game, certainly on the offense. I mean, you can't argue with the number one rushing attack in the NFL. Crow having a phenomenal start to his season already, 386 yards on the year, 3 touchdowns. He's picked up 17 first downs just himself running the football. He's been good. But, again, not good enough. Because at the end of the day in the NFL, it's about winning and losing. There are 31 other teams that play in the same league that you do. All of them have a win.
They do.
The only team that doesn't, the Browns.
And the fact of the matter is, for this young football team, and I think it's something that the Dog Pound will question, I think we as analysts, local media will question, is at what point does the spirit of this young Hugh Jackson-coached football team break with not getting the satisfaction or the benefit of winning a football game and their efforts that go into each and every Sunday? And will that happen? I'm not saying that it will, but it is very defeating when you work hard all week. And I know you make a lot of money to be a professional athlete, but you work really hard all week and all you want is that good job satisfaction of winning as a team and enjoying that next 24 hours and not having the goose egg in your left column. That's defeating. It really is. And to know that every other team has had that satisfaction at least one time is defeating. And I think it's something that Hugh Jackson's got to reverberate throughout this locker room that of how close they are. And I think to think that you've been so close. If we only had done this, or if that wouldn't have happened. And it's one play here, one play there.
If you had Cody Parkey from this week, last week,
right,
you win that game. And by the way, kudos to him for just stepping out there, booting a 51-yarder and a 46-yarder that would have been good from much, much longer than that right down the pipe. I thought that was a strong bounce back for him. And that's probably the biggest. I think that first 51-yarder was as big a pressure kick as he ever had. If he misses that, he's probably, at that point,
he's probably released. Gone. Correct.
So big kick from him. There, yes, again, a lot of positives. I think Cody Kessler's shown that he can be a guy in your organization for a long time. Is he the long-term answer? Sure, there are physical limitations that are very apparent when you watch him live, watch him on tape. But doing the most with what he's got, making some good throws. And I'll tell you, that throw to Pryor for the touchdown was as good as you'll see anybody throw in the NFL and stood in there and took a big hit there. They brought 8 guys on that, took a big hit, and delivered that football. But again, not enough. The turnovers, this team, no margin for error. Shot themselves in the foot. They were rolling. They had scored 4 straight possessions. It was about to be 5 straight possessions. And they had that team on the heel, but they could not get the job done. 216-578-0850. Let's get your reactions. Brian Baldinger coming up at 1:30.
You are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily. Nathan Zagura, Matt Wilhelm. Of course, Matt, we talked about the good in this game. The bad, I would say, from a defensive standpoint, Cam Johnson had the 2 sacks. But other than that, not really enough pressure, although Brian Body Calhoun got 1. 3 sacks total in the game, but they weren't around the quarterback as much in this one. And again, we're struggling to cover tight ends.
We are struggling to cover tight ends, and surprisingly, I thought we covered him well down the field, meaning like 10 yards or more. It was, I don't know whether we were sinking too much or we were very worried about DeSean Jackson getting behind us and Crowder kind of working that intermediate area, but we got deep and we left a lot of voids in underneath zones, and you have players like Crowder who can catch the football in space and turn a 5-yard catch into a 25-yard play, or Jordan Reed, a guy who can catch the ball, you know, at or around the line of scrimmage or for a 4 or 5-yard gain, and just there was no one, you know, for him the ability to just turn up the field and make those plays. And I think even furthermore, to go back to your point about, you know, no pressure was, you know, the second Jordan Reed touchdown was stand in the pocket, stand in the pocket, stand in the pocket. Oh, look back across the field to Jordan Reed, you know, and find him when he's the key to escape. What, DeMario Davis and Jordan Poyer, I believe.
It was. DeMario Davis was on him a lot in coverage. I mean, at the end of the day, you held the Redskins to their lowest, the number one passing offense. It was averaging about 340 a game. You held them to their lowest output, 156 yards passing, and you held them to only 300 yards of offense in this game, which was the best. The first two drives, it looked like they were going to score 800 points. And then they settled in, got to him. Cam Johnson, what a week he had, was on the Arizona practice squad, finds out Friday night the Browns want to sign him, gets on a plane Saturday, flies from Arizona to D.C., which is not a short flight, gets to meets the team at the team hotel, plays Sunday, comes up with two sacks.
Crazy.
Absolutely crazy. But again, not good enough for this Browns team. Positives, 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 but not good enough. 216-578-0850, Brian Baldinger coming up in a few minutes. Reggie in Youngstown. Reggie, welcome to the show.
Hey, guys, how we doing?
Good, man.
Good, good. Hey, that was a great game yesterday, don't you think? Because I'm telling you, man, the offensive line, I'm glad to hear you guys compliment on. I thought they did a fantastic job. I'm hoping that the center, do you guys know, is the center that we had there, the
Austin
one that's
Ryder,
the natural center?
I think he's going
to be able to play?
I don't think so. That looked like a pretty significant injury to me.
Oh, man, ain't that something. Well, we just have to make some adjustments again. But, you know, I thought the guys did really, really well, fellas. I'm surprised, though, you know, Matt, that the defense, you know, the other week, the defense been playing really, really good. And yesterday they just wasn't really getting the type of pressure that we needed. But the offense was fantastic. And far as I'm concerned, as looking at as a fan and also as a coach at a time when I was coaching, I definitely, Cody, he would be my quarterback, not unless something drastically happened to the offense with him back there that I would change. Because I told you, man, he's going to be good. Matt, he's going to be a heck of a quarterback, man.
Yeah, he is. And I think at this point right now, Hugh Jackson, Pep Hamilton, Kirby Wilson as the run game coordinator, passing game coordinator, and, of course, the play caller in Hugh Jackson are putting in the work, as well as Cody Kessler, with an understanding. So many people want to talk about Carson Wentz and his ability to go rip up the league through three football games. As you've mentioned, yes, he's had, you know, the interception, you know, yesterday to Josh Norman on a badly thrown ball, but his ability to convert on third downs and do what is asked to do him. And I think what has escaped this football team, and a lot of it has to do with not having Corey Coleman, is to our ability to vertically stretch the football field that, I'd say, 3 to 6 times in a football game. That is something that Hugh Jackson does and has been able to do pretty much everywhere he's been. You have the luxury of having a guy like A.J. Green in Cincinnati. Of course, you're going to take those shots. We don't have that guy. I don't think Terrell Pryor on Josh Norman was going to be the best down-the-field opportunity. We took one to Ricardo Lewis down the other sideline, ball slightly overthrown. But you get Corey Coleman back, and right now we're winning. I don't say we're not winning football games, but Cody Kessler is winning. The offense is winning underneath nickel and diming teams, out scheming teams, and moving the chains, shortening the game, having some time of possession, and really ultimately, as Red just said, the one thing that kind of, you know, as he spoke about it, popped out to me is the defense plays good one week, the offense kind of struggles another week. We have yet to play a complete football game. The special teams has let us down in Baltimore, you know, and so we need that. Sproles return, you know, in the Philadelphia game that sets up a score. So yeah, we have yet to play complimentary football where not even all of them play great, but where all of them play good and solid. And yet we haven't done that, and we're right there.
Yeah.
So that's where, and again, I know they get Tom Brady back, but that team can't be excited about the what they put out on the football field this past week against the Buffalo Bills.
No, and they get it should be a big change, but I know Bill Belichick was unhappy, and it's going to be a tough one for the Browns to get their first win against those New England Patriots. Let's go now quickly. We've got Will in Beachwood. Will, welcome to the show.
Hey, guys. Hey, Nate. Hey, Matt. You guys are awesome. I loved your opening take, the stat breakdown that you had. One of the best I've ever heard.
Thanks.
You're welcome. I think a lot of shows may have opened up with something negative, but you got inside the numbers, and when you broke it down like that, I didn't really realize all that. You can't necessarily judge a book by its cover. The guys are doing some really good things out there. I don't think it was that long ago we'd get a first down and it'd be a surprise, you know? So now we're rolling down the field. We're doing a lot of good stuff. So
yeah, I mean,
cool.
You know,
that's a good point.
It is a good point. And I think everybody watching who's a Browns fan can see positivity, but at the same time, you see that this is a young team that is making mistakes that's costing them the opportunities to win football games. And that's happened certainly 3 weeks in a row. And this week they played again for the majority of the game well enough to win. They gave up the first two touchdowns. Then they started to play pretty good defense. You got Jamar Taylor interception for the second straight week. And then basically controlled the ball the entire third quarter. And unfortunately, you're driving 10 plays, 63 yards. You're down at the Washington 16, first down and with the ball. And then you fumble. And then you get it back 3 plays later. You fumble 2 plays later. Interception. So in the span of 6 plays, you turn the ball over 3 times, and that was the difference in the game. The Browns had it going, and they had all the momentum. They basically kept the Redskins off the field in the third quarter. The Redskins had the ball for 1 possession in the third quarter, 5 plays, 16 yards with a penalty. They gained up net 11 yards and punted the ball back to us. The Browns held the ball the entire third quarter until that fumble, which was obviously a big momentum swinger in that one and basically changed the entire game. When we come back, Brian Baldinger was on the call yesterday. We'll get his take on this young Browns team. Also see what he thought of the Duke Jackson fumble that was not. When
Duke Johnson.
Here, what did I say?
Duke Jackson.
Ooh, Duke Jackson would be a nice name, though. Duke Johnson. Yes, Duke Johnson fumble that was not a fumble. We'll get his take on that. Brian Baldinger next here on CBD.
You are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily. Nathan Zagura, Matt Wilhelm going to the Ohio Business Machines hotline now. OBM, Ohio Business Machines, preferred copier provider of the Cleveland Browns, who know that it's every day is game day in your office. Call 216-485-2000 or visit ohiobusinessmachines.com. And joining us on the OBM hotline right now is Brian Baldinger, who was on the call yesterday for Compass Media. Brian, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks. Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Baldy, when you watched this game yesterday, obviously the Browns remain 0-4, but do you see any signs of positivity for Browns fans from the effort you saw yesterday?
Yeah, I do. I do see an effort. I mean, they ran the ball well. I mean, obviously the three straight turnovers there, you know, late in the third quarter, the fourth quarter, you know, doomed them in. But, you know, you saw a competitive team out there. I mean, they took the crowd out of that. You know, they gave up the first two early drives, and it looked like it could be a long day. And then they, you know, they took the crowd out. They got themselves a drive. They got it tied back up. They took the lead. I mean, these are certain things that I don't think, you know, that you would have said they could have done, say, week one against Philadelphia. Philadelphia's a better team than Washington. But nonetheless, you know, they got back into the game. They took the lead. They had a chance to add to it. And, you know, I'm not going to say they're snake bitten because they create a lot of their own snakes.
Right.
And so that's what they've got to stop right now. But, you know, they had Miami on the ropes last week. They should have won that game. And they had, you know, they had they had all the good reasons to win that game yesterday.
They definitely did. And Brian, go in a little bit of detail just on your perspective of Terrell Pryor going into this football season, making the transition from quarterback to wide receiver and almost the finished product, even though he's still being molded every week, on what you saw of him yesterday and even going back to what you saw of him in Miami.
Yeah, you know, I mean, look, they benched the corner, Byron Maxwell, after, you know, he torched him the week before. You know, they benched him for Thursday night in that game against Cincinnati. And then yesterday, look, they put, you know, a kid that makes $15 million a year and Josh Norman on him, and he took him to school in the first half. In fact, you know, you just wonder why they don't throw to him more, to be honest with you. He's their best player right now. I went up to him and I talked to him before the game yesterday, and I just you know, I just wanted to see what his mindset was like, what kind of kid. I'd never met him before. I certainly knew who he was. But, you know, the one thing that I was impressed by was he said, hey, man, last week was last week. I got to be a whole lot better today. I'm going against a much better player, and I've got to be better. And he was. He was better. He caught the ball in traffic. He caught the ball on the sidelines. You know, he got his hands on him. I mean, he dropped the one ball on the sideline yesterday, but otherwise – I just think, you know, if you get him and Corey Coleman and, you know, you get some of these young guys that they're high on, you keep developing them. I mean, certainly you're building something there at that position, I think.
Talking with Brian Baldinger from NFL Network and, of course, Compass Media Networks. Baldy, when you look at this team, it's not often that an 0-4 team is leading the NFL in rushing yards per game, rushing yards per attempt, and that they've got the number two running back in Isaiah Crowell. What have you seen from the Browns' third-year back, who really seems to be thriving with Hugh Jackson?
Well, he's patient, first of all. I mean, he doesn't rush any of his runs. You know, he trusts. You know, he trusts his eyes to when things are going to open up. He doesn't take a lot of negative runs. The one thing I like to see from Isaiah is, like, you know, I have no idea why they put the fullback back there yesterday, Johnson, in that type of set. I mean, that's his carry. I mean, he's not tired. They rotated him and Duke real well, I think. Both of them will run the ball really well. But, you know, Isaiah obviously had a hot hand yesterday. And you just got to keep feeding them. I mean, I'm watching Ezekiel Elliott in the late game, and he gets 23 carries, and he gets, you know, he gets 16 of them in the second half. Well, yep. Isaiah hadn't gotten 16 carries in the game yet. Like, they're the same size, they're the same, you know. I mean, I think Isaiah might be just as good as Ezekiel Elliott. You know, I mean, he's got a better average, and he's very, very patient and runs behind his pads. He's very strong. He's got great leg drive. He doesn't keep it, you know, he keeps his feet moving. I just like to see him give him more carries. Yesterday was a prime example to do it.
Yeah, I think we would all like to see that from the Browns, because Crow is off to a phenomenal start, averaging 6.4 yards per carry in the early going. Baldy, I wanted to ask you about one play that a lot of Browns fans are harping on. I happen to be right there on the sideline doing the radio broadcast, which was Duke Johnson's fumble, where it seemed that he clearly got the ball back and then held it up, and yet the officials were looking at a pile that never contained the football. What was your take on that play, and how does something like that happen?
You know, Jeff Triplett was the referee yesterday. He seemed to have some trouble with the clock, Matt. I mean, you saw some of the things, some of the issues they had. I went back and watched that play today, and clearly, you know, Baker got the ball out of his hands. It's a fumble. I think it was Baker. But anyways, the ball's on the ground, and, you know, then there's a scrum, and he comes up with the ball. But yeah, I'm trying to figure it out myself. Like, he has the ball. Like, I didn't see anything else. I see a Redskin have the ball.
Right.
I don't know what happened between the pile – and Duke showing the ball, you know, clear hands to it, what they saw. So, I read a bunch of garbage today about, you know, what the call was. But I don't know how to interpret that, beyond, unless it's just spin mode. But to me, the ball carrier fumbles and he comes up and he shows the ball to, you know, 82,000 in Redskin Stadium. Like, it's still their ball. Like,
right.
I didn't really understand it.
Yeah, and they couldn't review it because it was reviewed, but the review didn't anything. It actually happened right in front of me, and the female ref official who went in was fixated on a pile and was still trying to peel them out of the pile to find the ball, and Duke had the ball and already passed it on to Pryor, who would pass it on to another official. And unfortunately for the Browns and this team, unfortunately not good enough to overcome things like that. And let's be honest, they shot themselves in the foot. I think that Malcolm Johnson fumble was a huge turning point in this game.
Well, they were up 20. I think they were winning 2017.
Correct,
You know, they had a good drive there. And, you know, I mean, you were there. I mean, 82,000 people, they can't make less noise than they were making. They're sitting on their hands.
Yep.
And I think they're thinking, like, the Browns are going to get their win here. Like, that's how I felt. Like, they had control of the game. And I don't know. Like, Isaiah was having a great game. And he didn't look tired, didn't look worn out. He didn't look like, you know, he needed a breather at all. They'd been rotating him and Duke. And so to put Malcolm in that situation, you know, he's never carried a ball yet this year. And really, when you watch him, you know, run that ball, Matt, he clearly doesn't protect the ball.
Right.
He's got it hanging out there on one arm, and it gets poked out. I mean, he doesn't even protect it on his one carry. And you just wonder, like, you know, he's not used to carrying the ball. He's not used to being, you know, the lone back there. Maybe – you know, the up back, the blocking back, whatever. I mean, he's not used to being in that situation. So why you want to try to be too cute in that situation, I don't know. I mean, I agree. Like, it totally turned the momentum of the game. You can see the Redskins, they were just looking for something.
Yep.
They had no spark. They had no rhythm. They're driving the ball right down their throats, and they needed something to happen, and that was the play they needed.
It was. And Brian, last question from me. And it just comes from a place of Hugh Jackson. You go to 0-4, the only team in the National Football League that is, in fact, 0-4.
You've had opportunities against the Ravens, up 20 points. You make a kick, you beat the Dolphins, and of course, as we just talked about, the turnovers yesterday. What's the message to this young football team that continues to keep them motivated? Is it being close and just a few plays away from winning some football games?
I mean, I think it's got to be part of it, but I think you also have to point out that, you know, they're not good enough in certain spots, you know, to respond after that type of situation that happens. Just being mentally tougher, you know, it doesn't come down to one play like the kick against Miami. There are other plays you got to make. I mean, I just think that, you know, I mean, I just, in talking a little bit with Hugh yesterday, I mean, I just think that he has this unbelievable belief that regardless of what their record is or how they're losing these games, that they're going to get it done, that they're going to turn the corner, and they're going with, I mean, I've never seen 16 rookies on a 53-man roster before.
Yep.
That they've got the right kids, and you got to get rid of Josh Gordon. You got to get rid of Justin Gilbert. You just got to get rid of these mistakes that have been made, and you got to do it with the right kids. And I think they think that they're doing it with the right kids for the first time in a long time.
Well, what were your impressions of Cody Kessler, a guy that, you know, wasn't really supposed to be starting at this point in the season? The Browns down to their third-string quarterback, two games on the road now, Miami and Washington. What did you think of his game?
Well, I thought it's fine, but, you know, the knock on Cody Kessler is he doesn't really have an NFL arm.
Yep.
And, you know, in those situations towards the end of the game when you got to, like, push the ball down the field to have a chance, I mean, he clearly doesn't feel comfortable just pushing it. Like, you know, whether he can throw it a good distance or he can't drive it. So, obviously, he's a smart kid, and he can, you know, he can get you in the right play, and he can change protection. He looks like he can do all that stuff. Well, we knew that. You know, the knock on him coming out of USC is he just didn't have a quality NFL arm, and in that division with Flacco and Ben, and, you know, you've got to have that type of arm when you start getting in November and December when you battle the elements, and he doesn't have that type of arm. And so, you know, but, look, nobody thought he'd be playing here in week 3 and 4. You know, I think he was a developmental type guy, and here he is, you know, he's trying to win games for you. And but that's the knock, and I think that's the weakness on him.
What does this team have to do to finally get over the hump and get that first win?
Well, I think, you know, the mistakes, they got to just, you know, play a clean game. I mean, they don't have a lot of margin for error.
Yep.
And so, you know, if you jump on Baltimore 20-0, you got to find a way to put it away. And so, can't let those games slip away. They're, you know, they've got a lot of championship medal on that Baltimore team. The Dolphins had no business winning that game. I thought they outplayed the Dolphins. You know, look, you got to take a kicker, and, you know, Cody Parkey, like, I've seen him make a lot of kicks. He made some good kicks yesterday. But that's, you know, he's got to make one of those kicks, you know, in that game to win. And, you know, yesterday, the fumbles are just inexcusable. They just are. Like, you just can't lay the ball down like that. That's not a good defensive team in Washington. They had one guy go after another defensively. They're a very weak defensive team. They don't have a good pass rush. And that was a game that, you know, that was made for them to win. There's no question about it. They just got to find a way to stop the mistakes at the end.
You are right, Baldy. We appreciate the time. Thanks so much for being with us and for your analysis. And hopefully we'll talk with you again after a Browns win.
Yeah, let's do it after a win.
Yeah, let's do it. It'll be fun. Right. We all want to do that. We want to just about do anything after a win. We'll take it. Baldy, thanks so much.
All right, man.
All right, our guest there on the Ohio Business Machines Hotline, Brian Balding from NFL Network, was on the call of the game yesterday. And I like what he said when reading. I read some of the garbage they were writing about that fumble. Like, it's crazy. That's one of the craziest things I've ever seen. It literally happened right in front of me. I was screaming at the female official. I'm like, he's got the ball. He's got the ball. And she's over there pulling people out of this pile where they were fighting over nothing. Duke had the ball
the
whole time.
Why is it not reviewable?
Because they said there's no clear sign of recovery. You can't tell that the ball wasn't in the pile. Now, the thing about it is, had somebody on the Redskins thought they recovered it and Duke
can recover both ways. It's we recover it or they recover it.
Right. But my point is, if somebody on the Redskins thought Duke stole it from him unfairly under the pile, they would have said something. They were still pretending, fighting over a ball that they didn't know where it was. Nobody knew where the ball was except for Duke, because he pulled it back in with his left arm immediately and had it and was up with it while these guys are fighting. And the female ref's pointing at this pile and going like this. She doesn't even know where the ball is. And if you asked her under truth serum, if she knew where the ball is after watching the video, if she said that she did, she's a liar. Because she didn't. She had no clue from the very get-go, because I was literally standing right behind her. And I was sitting there stunned. I'm like, what is going on? We've got the ball. How are they letting this happen?
Were you screaming?
I was screaming.
Were you on television?
I don't think so.
I saw you on television.
Was I screaming?
On Crowell's run.
Where he picked up the first down?
Yeah.
I was fired up.
How could you not be?
How could you not be? It was great effort. Three guys he ran around or through.
Through.
What a stud.
He's a stud. The guys are, and that's one thing that I'll say, and I know we got to grab a break, is guys are, he's not only running through tackles, but guys are bouncing off of him.
And he's fast. And on that one, you saw he hit some guy, knocked him over, bounced off of it, and picked up another 12 yards.
Yeah.
And it basically drug the linebacker with him, who kind of did a kind of a somersault just to get him down and use his momentum to tip Crow forward.
The next thing is, somehow, and that's all rack my brain on, and I'll actually throw it out
that
there.
Was a you look like you were racking
throw it
your
out
brain.
There to Hugh Jackson is, there is somehow, some way on those runs, those power runs, that we need to inside release those wide receivers and get them up on the safeties.
And get them up
we
there
saw,
for that.
We saw two safeties collide into each other against Baltimore on an 85-yard touchdown. Okay, Crow, since then, has had multiple chunk runs, and those safeties had made the tackle. If those guys are in space and or have to come off a player and Crow can make a cut instead of having to, you know, just go 50-50, one right or left, he makes a cut off of our player with a guy coming off a block, those are the ones that go the distance as well.
So close on a couple of those yesterday, again, to just taking it all the way to the house. All right, when we come back, we'll have a little Browns news for you. We'll take your phone calls, and we'll hear from Cody Kessler, Jim Donovan, 2 o'clock here on CBD.
Here's Cousins, play action fake, back, loads up, fires, it's picked off! Jamar Taylor's got it at the 40, 35, right side 30, 25, 20, cut back middle, 15, down to the 12-yard line! Taylor does it again, just like last week in Miami!
You are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily. Nathan Segura, Matt Wilhelm with you here in the Dog Bowl in Berea. Of course, folks, don't forget to head to browns.whereimfrom.com to enter for your chance to win an autographed player t-shirt and a Where I'm From apparel gift pack. Winner will be selected on Sunday morning before the game. Nathan Segura and, of course, Matt Wilhelm here. We're going to go back to phone lines. Got our guy Cam from Canada. Cam.
Hey, fellas.
Shoot us straight, Cam.
Yeah, good. You know what? I'll throw it out there and just I'll hang up and let you guys go over whatever you want, whatever kind of tickles you. Positive, you know, our completion percentage is, I think he's 12th in the league right now, Cody. And this isn't a guy that came in and got groomed starting in May. This is a guy who is taking first-team reps for the first time in his life. So he's third-down conversions, 8 of 12 yesterday. So we're, I think, top 12 in the league in that. So our culture of running backs pulling themselves out of the game has to stop. Duke's hand goes up too much. Crow's hand goes up too much. Where I come from, you got to shoot a guy to get him off the field. So that's the core issue. That's the core issue of why Malcolm was in the game yesterday is because Duke was getting nursed and Crow pulled himself off. That has to change. We have to have a score zone identity. We're moving backwards in the score zone, and Hugh's got to tighten that up a little bit. We can't be losing yardage in the score zone. Pryor has to stop losing his mind on the sidelines as a leader. He's the face of our franchise right now. That has to quit. For those people that ripped Ray Farmer about not being able to find talent, the three best running backs in the NFL yesterday, West, Duke, and Crowell, with the exception of Zeke, obviously, were all guys that came in 14. I hope the media does a retraction on our front office not being able to find offensive linemen, because clearly they found one of the best ones in the league when it comes to the run game. And finally, we moved light years ahead with Hugh putting the culpability and accountability in the hands of Duke and Malcolm after those fumbles. I love that he did that. If that doesn't happen, if they hold on to the ball, we're not having these discussions. So nothing against the boys. I mean, they're all learning and stuff, but
sure.
At the end of the day, hang on to the ball and
the Browns
get about this stuff.
And you hang on to a win. Camp, thank you very much for the call, by the way. Reports coming out that Austin Ryder, who played very well at center, torn ACL, will be heading to IR for the Browns. I can tell you the Browns have released Armonte Brine, who just came off of his four-game suspension, apparently still facing discipline from the NFL there. So we'll see where he ends up. Also, John Hughes, who was cut by the Browns, signed by the Patriots.
Correct.
They had already let him go.
Did they?
On last Friday, yeah.
Huh.
So it was a short-lived tenure there for John.
What a paycheck.
I don't even know if he got – I don't think he made it to a game.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't think he made it to a game.
Then no soup for you.
No soup for you.
Still collecting from the Browns though.
Yeah, because he was here after,
on the active
after week
correct.
One. That's right. So that's the latest there, Armonte Brine. Obviously, look, you have the opportunity. You know, you wanted a pass rusher. He is a good pass rusher, but I think Hugh Jackson said it best when he benched Alvin Bailey this week, and I'd bet Alvin Bailey will be back next week. I think he served his punishment of one game, but they don't have time for that foolishness, and Armani's been a guy who's been in trouble quite a bit. One of my favorite guys, actually. I really got to know him and liked him and wish him well, but you know, they don't have time for that. They're not dealing with it, and he still faces discipline from the league, so it's not clear when he would be
back. Well, again,
anyway.
When you talk about this football team, you talk about very small margin for error. You talk about evaluating. You talk about developing. And then I think Hugh Jackson, something that you, when you speak to him, he continually talks about in every conversation, you talk about winning. Okay. Armonte Brine has been unavailable to this football team for 4 weeks, still facing, some type of discipline from the league. So you've done nothing to help us win a football game. Nothing. Could you potentially? Yes. Are you in our grand scheme of things? Probably not. With the number of rookie and young players that we have on this football team that are contributing, doing it the right way, and buying into Hugh Jackson and their coaches. And, oh, by the way, double-digit picks again next year, and it's going to be harder to make this football team. So you part ways with a guy like that at this point because you ain't got time for him.
Right.
You might fit into what we're doing, but odds are that you're probably not. And through four games, you've done nothing because you have been suspended already. So... And I wouldn't be surprised, and I know there were rumors late last week, and nothing has been done with Josh Gordon on the same accord. But the talent between the two players is significantly different.
Yes, it certainly is. All right, let's quickly – actually, we don't have time. We're going to have Jim Donovan coming up. We still have Cody Kessler to hear from. We still have the head coach, Hugh Jackson, with his press conference. We'll get the latest on the injury updates. But, again, the word is out. Austin Ryder has a torn ACL, and it's a shame. He looked good. If that's the case, expect Greco to be back at center this week, Alvin Bailey at right guard. Spencer Drango had some of his most useful play this week as well, so maybe he's a guy that could get some time on this line. Also, Sean Coleman was active but did not see the field for the Browns. When we come back, Jim Donovan, the voice of the Browns from the PNC Bank Cleveland Browns Radio Network here on Cleveland Browns Daily.